Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
Brennst du für Technologien, die unsere Zukunft verändern? Dann code, plane, pilotiere, entwickle, erfinde, beschleunige und digitalisiere. Industrien, Städte, Mobilität, kurzum, alles, was unser Leben bewegt. Du willst aktiv das Morgen mitgestalten? Dann komm jetzt in unser Team. Geh einfach auf unser Jobportal siemens.de/karriere. Create a better tomorrow with us.
Hi, I'm Una Chaplin, and I'm the host of Hollywood Exiles. It tells the story of how my grandfather, Charlie Chaplin, and many others were caught up in a campaign to root out communism in Hollywood. Hollywood Exiles, from CBC Podcasts and the BBC World Service. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. Hello, I'm Oliver Conway. This edition is being recorded at 13 hours GMT on Thursday, the 18th of April. Will Ukraine get the weapons it needs to defend against Russian air attacks? We hear from the Italian island of Capri, where North American and European diplomats are meeting. Germany arrests two Russian dual nationals suspected of planning sabotage attacks. And we hear from an Israeli hostage released last year, whose husband is still a captive in Gaza.
They took us down to a tunnel. There was no oxygen there, and they just left us. I can't explain what the feeling is if not being able to breathe.
Also in the podcast,
the eruption was spewing materials, including small rocks. People who live outside the exclusion zone were also affected. So this means the impact is more than 5 kilometres in radius.
A volcano erupts 5 times in Indonesia, triggering a tsunami alert. We'll have the latest on Ukraine's hopes of getting more air defences in a moment. But the meeting of the G7 group of industrialised nations in Italy today is also talking about the Middle East conflict following Iran's attack on Israel at the weekend. As you may have heard in our previous podcast, efforts to negotiate a pause in the fighting in Gaza itself have suffered a possible setback after Qatar said it was reconsidering its role as a mediator between Israel and Hamas. The Gulf state is unhappy with what it called political point scoring from other countries after a US Democratic congressman said Qatar needed to put more pressure on Hamas. But what does this mean for the 100 or so Israeli hostages still thought to be held in Gaza? Aviva Siegel was released from there in November. But her husband, Keith, who was also kidnapped by Hamas, is still being detained. Lucy Manning has spoken to her, and a warning, this report contains distressing details.
I'm not speaking. I'm screaming. I need help from the whole world. I was there for 51 days. I know what it's like.
Can you tell me a bit about the conditions that you were held in?
Keith and I were moved 13 times, so with the different conditions. We met lots of terrorists and they acted brutally in every place we went to. One of the times they took us down to a tunnel and there was no oxygen there and they just left us there. And I can't explain what the feeling is if not being able to breathe and you know that it might be your last hours.
Keith and Aviva were also held in houses with other hostages where she witnessed beatings and was aware of sexual assaults.
They were so mean to us. They just starved us for days and ate in front of us. We weren't allowed to even stand and we weren't allowed to talk. One of the days, one of the girls went to the toilet and while she came back, I could see on her face that something happened. And only after a couple of hours, she came and she told us. She said he touched me. And that was one of the terriblest moments because I felt that I couldn't even look after this little girl. She's just a child.
You were aware, were you, that sexual assault was taking place on some of the female hostages?
Yes. Because I was there. And I saw the girls coming after those things happening and telling us what happened.
After 51 days, in November, Aviva was released, but without Keith.
I said that I'm not going without Keith, and I begged him. They didn't help, and they didn't even let me go and say goodbye to Keith until I pushed them. Luckily, I could give Keith a hug, and I told him to be strong for me, and I'll be strong for him. But I don't know. I'm starting to lose my hope, and I'm sure that Keith is. When I was there, I used to think to myself, rather being dead than to go through what I'm going through.
It wasn't until her release that she discovered her son Shai had survived the attack.
And when I saw Shai for the first time, I couldn't stop hugging him. And I told him that I thought that he was dead.
Why do you think it is that Keith and the others are still held after all this time?
I think that Hamas is getting the pleasure of them being there and seeing us suffer. I think that everybody, the whole world, needs to do more. Just get them out. Just get them out.
Aviva Siegel talking to Lucy Manning. The G7 foreign ministers meeting on the Italian island of Capri comes a day after Russian missiles killed 18 people in northern Ukraine. The Ukrainians have renewed their appeal for air defences. The US Congress could vote as soon as Saturday on $60 billion worth of funding for Ukraine. The US Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, says it is a crucial moment.
If Putin is allowed to proceed with impunity, we know he won't stop at Ukraine, and we can safely predict that his aggression will continue. Other would-be aggressors around the world will take note and unleash their own aggressions, and we will have a world of conflict, not a world of peace and security.
Antony Blinken at the G7 in Capri. So what more can we expect from that meeting? Our correspondent Jessica Parker is there.
The G7, as you know, is an informal group of wealthy nations. The EU turn up as well. So Josep Borrell, the EU's foreign policy chief, is here, where they discuss topics that they think need addressing urgently. And one of them, of course, is Ukraine and air defences. Josep Borrell, arriving today, said that more needed to be done to supply Ukraine with air defence. But look, that isn't new. We've heard that before. And then sometimes Ukraine does get new supplies, but clearly at the moment it's saying it's not enough. There have been direct comparisons made by Ukraine's foreign minister, who's also here, about the support that was provided to Israel during Saturday's attack by Iran versus the support he feels that Ukraine is getting. What is less clear to me at this point in the day here in Capri is whether we are going to get solid announcements from ministers. Jens Stoltenberg, the NATO chief, is here. So, look, we'll have to see what comes out when we hear from those ministers, including Antony Blinken, Lord Cameron from the UK is here, and Lena Baerbock from Germany as well. But certainly the sense of urgency is there for delivery. But there's also been a broader issue, as we know, in terms of supplying Ukraine with weapons, that the European Union and other countries in Europe have struggled to meet that demand. And certainly speaking to defence chiefs before, there's this feeling that the industrial base just hasn't quite been there, and that takes years to build up.
I've read that Antony Blinken is expected to raise the issue of China helping Russia behind the scenes, and he wants Europe to put pressure on Beijing. Can Europe do much?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. So, as you say, we've heard from the State Department recently that on an upcoming visit to China, Antony Blinken's going to raise US concerns about Beijing helping Russia build up its defence. And the US has been warning China not to aid Moscow's war effort for quite some time now. Chinese embassy spokesperson has said that China's not a party to the Ukraine war. But in terms of Europe, I mean, European leaders are walking quite a fine line. So I'm usually based in Berlin, and Chancellor Olaf Scholz was in China very recently, clearly trying to strike this balance between promoting business ties with a key trading partner, still Germany's biggest trading partner, while raising concerns over issues such as its reported support for Russia.
Jessica Parker on the Italian island of Capri. Meanwhile, two alleged Russian spies suspected of planning to sabotage German aid for Ukraine have been arrested in the southern German state of Bavaria. The pair, who have dual nationality, have been accused of scouting potential targets, including US military facilities based in Germany. The Russian ambassador has been called in by the foreign ministry in Berlin. Our correspondent there, Damian McGuinness, told us more about the suspects.
Well, they're accused of taking photos and videos of American and German military facilities in Bavaria, and according to German media reports here, also a base where Ukrainian soldiers are being trained on American Abrams tanks. Now, what prosecutors say is that they were preparing information so that an attack, a bomb attack or an arson attack, could be staged on German and American military infrastructure, and in particular those bases that supply support for Ukraine. And what officials say, German officials say, is that the aim was to carry out this attack in order to undermine Germany's quite substantial military support for Ukraine.
Yeah, the second largest donor of military aid to Ukraine. What has been the reaction in Germany?
Well, the German government certainly hasn't held back, Oliver. So German officials have now confirmed that the Russian ambassador to Berlin, as you say, has been summoned to the German foreign ministry for an explanation over the arrest of these two men. Germany's interior minister, Nancy Faeser, has said that Germany would not allow itself to be intimidated. In her words, she said Germany would continue its massive support for Ukraine. And the justice minister, Michael Buschmann, described this as a threat that Germany had to react to decisively and strongly. And I think this points to a broader concern within Germany of the fear of Russian activities. Germany has a huge Russian-speaking population, most of whom are German citizens, very well integrated, part of German society. But there is also an influx as well of people from Russia, some of them escaping conscription. And so you have a large Russian-speaking population, a large Russian population within Germany. And some of those now, there is a debate or a question about whether some of those might be loyal to the Kremlin and might one day pose a threat to Germany, which would be the case with these particular two men, who it sounds like from their profile is it sounds like they grew up in Germany or at least spent most of their lives here. So this is a broader question about what to do about a threat within Germany of people who may well be loyal to Russia.
Damian McGuinness in Berlin. Fire ants, named for the painful burning sensation of their sting, are highly invasive. They attack in swarms, and their bite can be deadly to animals and even humans. Now, an inquiry in Australia is set to report on the threat from fire ants there, with the species thought to have entered the country in shipping containers from South America. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney.
Sniffer dogs are on the front line in Australia's fight against a formidable invader.
Oh, mate, that's a classic. See all these with wings? The females, ready to fly?
Fire ants are one of the world's worst invasive species.
Dr. Pam Swepson has worked on Australia's National Fire Ant Eradication Program.
Any country that's been invaded by them has never been able to eradicate them.
Fire ants attack en masse. They lock their jaws onto their victim's skin and inject venom through a spike on their abdomen.
A swarm of ants will cover over the arm or leg, whatever disturbed the nest, and on a given signal, they'll all start to sting, and that results in burning blisters that feel like the people are being burnt, which is why they're called fire ants.
The red imported fire ant is one of the world's worst invasive species, with everything from crops to beehives to livestock known to fall victim.
The Australian Academy of Science warns the insects have the potential to drive some animal and plant species to extinction. They're also a danger to people.
I was watering the garden one day and all of a sudden I sort of felt this stinging sensation on my feet and I looked down and they were covered in ants.
Cameron Moore lives near Brisbane and was attacked by fire ants outside his home.
I sort of realised straight away they weren't the normal type little black ants or green ants that I'm used to. So I quickly hosed them off. So in the next hour or so, all these really itchy welts came up, about 8 or 9 on each foot. Then once the sort of stinging eased, then both feet started to swell and became quite itchy. And pretty much had swollen feet for the best part of 5 days afterwards.
I'm mad. You want to know why I'm mad? Because I got bit about 10 times by a bunch of fire ants.
The ants are native to South America, but have spread to other countries, including the United States, China and Japan. First found in Australia in 2001, but had probably been here undetected for years. It's thought they hitched a ride in shipping containers. They've now been recorded across the Queensland border in northern parts of New South Wales. Jack Goff is from Australia's Invasive Species Council.
This is a huge threat to our environment, a huge threat to our economy, and also to the lifestyle that we expect as Australians in terms of just being able to send your kids barefoot out into your backyard or turn up at your cricket game on the weekend and not expect to be stung and potentially put in hospital by this invasive killer pest.
The Queensland State Government says its eradication programs are world class. Ant bait is dropped from helicopters and lorries are checked for tiny unwanted hitchhikers. But critics, though, say the system has been an absolute shambles. They insist that Australia has underestimated the threat from fire ants, which they believe are spreading out of control.
Phil Mercer reporting from Australia. And still to come on the Global News podcast... The Japanese animation studio about to make film history.
Brennst du für Technologien, die unsere Zukunft verändern? Dann code, plane, pilotiere, entwickle, erfinde, beschleunige und digitalisiere. Industrien, Städte, Mobilität, kurzum, alles, was unser Leben bewegt. Du willst aktiv das Morgen mitgestalten? Dann komm jetzt in unser Team. Geh einfach auf unser Jobportal siemens.de/karriere. Create a better tomorrow with us.
You've heard of Charlie Chaplin, right?
Well, Charlie Chaplin was my grandfather, and there was a time when he was the biggest star in all the world. But something happened. Not just to him, but to hundreds of artists in Hollywood. They were forced to leave, forced out.
All episodes of Hollywood Exiles from the BBC World Service and CBC are available now. Search for Hollywood Exiles wherever you get your podcasts.
Next to a small island in northern Indonesia, where people have been scrambling to get away from a volcanic eruption. Residents trying to evacuate by boat after Mount Ruang erupted 5 times, throwing rock and ash into the air and spewing out lava. Officials have warned that if the volcano collapses, it could cause a tsunami. Here's one of the rescue workers.
The eruption was spewing materials, including small rocks. People who live outside the exclusion zone were also affected. So this means the impact is more than 5 kilometres in radius.
Well, footage of the eruption makes it clear why people would be so desperate to get away, as I heard from our Asia-Pacific editor, Celia Hatton.
Absolutely. I mean, it is stunning to look at, Oliver. I've watched this video quite a few times. You can watch it for yourself on the BBC website. If it wasn't so dangerous, you'd really want to take a really good look at it. You can see lightning striking the top of the volcano, bright red lava flowing down its sides. It almost looks like what a child would draw if they were going to draw a typical volcano. It's called a stratovolcano. It's got really steep sides and sticky lava that kind of clings to the sides of it, and it goes down really slowly. Now, the worry is, though, that this volcano will lead to a triple event. So officials think that it's an earthquake which triggered this volcano to erupt for the first time in 22 years, which is quite rare to begin with. And they think because of this type of volcano that it is, with these really steep sides, it could lead to another rare event, a tsunami. They're worried that the volcano itself will lead to a debris avalanche. So the volcano will just collapse into the water with such force that it will trigger a tsunami. So the last time it happened with this particular volcano, it was in 1871. The last time it actually happened in Indonesia was a few years ago in 2018. It led to a tsunami which killed 400 people.
Yeah, you mentioned the possible collapse of the volcano into the sea. That's the sort of thing we saw a couple of years ago in Tonga. Now, not right in the same area, but both of these are part of this so-called ring of fire. I mean, how common is this kind of thing in Indonesia?
Well, it's incredibly common. I mean, the Pacific Ring of Fire is home to 90% of the world's recorded earthquakes and 75% of the world's active volcanoes. So people are really worried, though. As you said before, they're scrambling to get away from this region because they're so worried about this threat of tsunami.
Asia Pacific editor Celia Hatton. China's economy is facing its biggest challenge in two decades. The so-called factory of the world is struggling to recover from years of COVID lockdowns and a global downturn. President Xi Jinping has responded with a plan to make more electric cars, solar panels and wind turbines to sell to Europe. But that has many Western firms worried that low-cost Chinese goods will force them out of business. Our China correspondent Laura Bicker has been to the country's manufacturing hub to find out more.
54-year-old Ren Wenbing seems reluctant to leave the hollowed-out brick shell, which was once a thriving factory floor in China's manufacturing hub of Dongguan.
I feel heartbroken. I've spent so many years here, and now this place has become of this. All the workers feel astonished and are disappointed.
He's not just mourning the loss of a furniture firm. He grieves for the passing of China's once unstoppable economy. He and 300 million workers like him helped propel this country's growth. They left their remote villages to work in factories, leaving their children to be raised by their grandparents.
You've stayed here and 11 years. That's a long time. That must hurt.
My children, of course, miss me. There is nothing we could have done. After the daily costs of living, the money we send home for our parents, the money for our children's education, we didn't have much left. We had no choice. All the migrant workers face this.
Dongguan was once the factory of the world, but rising trade tensions with the US, coupled with strict COVID lockdowns, have left miles of empty buildings.
I'm wandering amongst the ruins of miles and miles of abandoned shoe factories. And now, instead of the sound of throngs of workers, all you can hear is birdsong, high grasses. And this is where your trainers were once made. All of that production has now since moved to Southeast Asia.
But China's success is tied to its factory floors. And the country has been finding new ways to thrive. Beijing has ramped up spending on renewable energy and leads the world in the production of solar panels, lithium batteries and electric cars. China's vast capacity to build has leaders in Europe and the United States on edge. In an exhibition park in Beijing, thousands of green technology companies are showing off their latest products, focusing on green energy storage. Among them is salesperson Yan Mu.
And what do you think of, like, the capacity in China to produce this kind of green energy?
I think the Chinese company is leading the whole energy storage market with innovation, with new technologies. Right now, I think 80 to 90% of the energy storage equipment are designed and manufactured in China. So we are leading the market in the whole world.
But Europe and the United States fear China is trying to save its own economy by producing cut-price and state-subsidized green technology to sell abroad. This tactic, they argue, is driving down the cost of solar panels and other emerging technology and driving their firms out of business.
Our China correspondent Laura Bicker. Police from the UK and 17 other countries have broken up a cybercrime gang that provided technology to help criminals scam their victims. 40 people were arrested around the world, as I heard from our correspondent, Tom Simons.
Well, the British law enforcement agencies have described this outfit as crime as a service. So that's criminals offering other criminals the technology and the training through slick videos to send out phishing messages, which are sent to people in an attempt to get them to click on links. They are then taken to fake websites, which look like payment systems or shopping sites. The hope is among the criminals that they will give up their credit card details and they can be defrauded as a result. This is a major global operation that the police have busted, hosted in the UK, but arrests 40 plus all over the world. And the concern is that this sort of crime as a service is growing, criminals with technological knowledge being able to offer a way of making industrial fraud on a global scale. And that's really what the British police and agencies are trying to stop.
Yeah, now you were at a raid here in London. And what did the police find? And tell us how they cracked the case.
Well, this all started back in 2022 when a small group of technology experts paid for by the financial system, the financial banks, for example, discovered on the dark web information about a website called LabHost, which is actually on the normal internet, which was being used by these criminals. And the police began an investigation and they managed to get into the server which the website was hosting data on. And from there, they got the details of all the criminals using this service and also all of the victims. And there are tens of thousands of victims worldwide. And the interesting thing about that is because they had all the details of the criminals, their email addresses, their phone numbers, they were able to send each of them, or about 800 of them, a personalized video telling them exactly what data had been found on the LabHost server. And that's something, a strategy that's been backed by behavioral scientists. What they're trying to do is get criminals to mistrust or distrust other criminals that they come across on the internet, not know when their details are going to be revealed to the police. I was at a property in South London. Police smashed the door down, arrested a man and were searching a garage area and the house. Other people were arrested at two airports in the UK. And so far, they've arrested 24 people in the UK. And I think there's been one charge. So clearly an ongoing investigation, a major investigation with implications for police forces who've been 17 countries involved in this, who've been backing this UK push against cybercrime.
Tom Simons. A Japanese animation studio will make history next month by becoming the first group to be given an honorary Palme d'Or award at the Cannes Film Festival. Studio Ghibli has earned a cult following over the past four decades, producing more than 20 animated films. Isabella Jewell reports.
Internationally famous for films like My Neighbor Totoro and The Tale of the Princess Kaguya, Studio Ghibli has revolutionized the world of animation. The group is known for its beautifully hand-drawn characters, meticulous backgrounds and playful music, all centered on an adventurous plot. Studio Ghibli was founded in 1985 by Japanese film directors Isao Takahata and Hayao Miyazaki, and the producer Toshio Suzuki. This was off the back of their hugely successful post-apocalyptic fantasy film, Nausicaä of the Valley of the Wind, released the previous year. Ever since, they've achieved what had seemed impossible, to independently produce artistic masterpieces that are also popular on the mass markets. It's a winning formula that they continue to carry, taking an Oscar for The Boy and the Heron last month.
All right, and the Oscar goes to The Boy and the Heron.
The film's about a boy who moves to the countryside after his mother's death and enters a fantastical world with a talking grey heron.
What is this place?
This world is filled with the dead.
I know it's a lie, but I have to see.
And now the studio's adding yet another award to its already packed trophy cabinet. Iris Knobloch, president of the Festival de Cannes, said that it was the colourful universes of Studio Ghibli films combined with their sensitive, engaging narrations that earned the honorary Palme d'Or. Toshio Suzuki said it was an honour for the studio, whose only goal 40 years ago was to bring high-level animation to people of all ages.
A report by Isabella Jewell. And that is all from us for now, but the Global News podcast will be back very soon. This edition was mixed by James Piper and produced by Tracy Gordon. Our editor's Karen Martin. I'm Oliver Conway. Until next time, goodbye.
Brennst du für Technologien, die unsere Zukunft verändern? Dann code, plane, pilotiere, entwickle, Erfinde, beschleunige und digitalisiere. Industrien, Städte, Mobilität, kurzum, alles, was unser Leben bewegt. Du willst aktiv das Morgen mitgestalten? Dann komm jetzt in unser Team. Geh einfach auf unser Jobportal siemens.de/karriere. Create a better tomorrow with us.
You've heard of Charlie Chaplin, right? Well, Charlie Chaplin was my grandfather, and there was a time when he was the biggest star in all the world. But something happened, not just to him, but to hundreds of artists in Hollywood. They were forced to leave, forced out.
All episodes of Hollywood Exiles from the BBC World Service and CBC are available now. Search for Hollywood Exiles wherever you get your podcasts.